And the minute I did that, my COO said, yeah, that's going to go over to marketing.
Oh, good.
So,
yeah,
completely lost.
You're welcome.
So, yeah, well, exactly. I mean, I did.
And once again, welcome to the Digital Customer Success Podcast with me, Alex Turkovich. So glad you could join us here today and every week as I seek out and interview leaders and practitioners who are innovating and building great scaled CS programs. My goal is to share what I've learned and to bring you along with me for the ride so that you get the insights that you need to build and evolve your own digital CS program. If you'd like more info, want to get in touch, or sign up for the latest updates, go to digitalcustomersuccess.com. For now, let's get started. Hello and welcome back to the Digital Customer Experience Podcast. So great to see you. It is episode 52 today. And before we get started, I wanted to ask you to please bookmark your calendars for June 6th. Because I'll be taking part in Maddox Scale and CS Summit. It's an online virtual event that's going to be taking place all about scaling CS. And there are so many incredibly talented people on the roster for this event. It's one not to be missed. And it's virtual, so you don't have to travel anywhere, which is great. If you sign up with a link that's down in the description or the show notes, the first five people will get a $20 Uber Eats gift card, which is pretty awesome because, you know, when you go to conferences during the breaks, you want some snacks. And so this way you can order your own dang snacks for the summit. So again, June 6th, mark your calendars and check out the link that's in the description. For today's episode, I'm joined by none other than Jeff Heckler, who I was pleased to have on the show because he's quite well known in the CS community and has a lot of great things to say. We talk about a bit of a state of the union of what he's seeing out there right now and, specifically talking about, the economics of SaaS and how that's impacting digital, the proliferation of AI, and how that has a little bit of ways to go as well. We cover a fair amount of topics. So I really hope that you enjoy my conversation with Jeff Heckler today, because I sure did. Dude, Jeff, I appreciate you being on. I was excited to have you on because you're like one of those voices that's like continually in CS, and you're a multi-award winner and you've been a present voice in CS forever, and I think a lot of people really look up to your kind of opinion and thought leadership on stuff. So obviously I was happy to have you on the show, and I'm pleased that you accepted my invitation.
Well, it's my pleasure. I had the joy of listening to some of the other pieces you've done. It's a real service to the community, so delighted and flattered to be here with you and some of the folks that have also contributed. So
you're the one who listened.
Hey, there are a lot of thumbs up on YouTube, I can tell you, from being there and watching. So
there's some. I wanted to ask you a little bit about, obviously, your background starting out, because I saw, at first I got confused because I saw King's College on there. I was like, what's homeboy doing going to school in London? But then I realized it wasn't that King's College. But I was LinkedIn stalking you, of course, and your career has taken an interesting, I think, arch over the last, 20 or so years. And I noticed you spent a ton of time in BI, right? What was that arc that led you into BI and then that transition into CS? And I would imagine that the BI stuff has really served you well after.
That's not included on there is when I was a high school teacher before BI. We'll throw that in there. But no, I got into business intelligence through MicroStrategy, which is still out there. And one of the tools that didn't get gobbled up in any sort of acquisition, that's because the CEO would never allow that to happen. But so I got into software in the late 90s, which is an embarrassing amount of time ago. I really fell into the complex problem solving of it. A lot of chemistry, a lot of science and math in my background, and that just kind of fit. I never, when I was in college, the computer on campus were used for writing papers. We just got out of word processing, processors. So anyways, so my roles in BI were customer facing, and that was the biggest joy. And shoulder to shoulder with customers, solving problems, and getting to know their use cases. And so I now think about if customer success would have been around as early as it came on and I found it, I would have been in it. I got in customer success around 2011, 2012. Mm-hmm. And for a similar thing, trying to solve business intelligence problems for a startup and then learning a little bit about customer success. And then I came from a professional services background on the BI side. And so talking to my leadership and saying, if we sat with our customers and ate margin, gave a little bit more on the PS side away, we would have great feedback loops for our product. And then it came with sales and marketing. And so customer success for me as a person and my character and how I like to work with people just fits. And so yeah, that's where it really works. Two things I explain to my family and friends that aren't familiar with maybe even tech. I say, I sit in the Penn Station of my customers and my company. And that kind of buzz and energy I feed off of, I hope I feed into it. And if I wasn't doing customer success in tech, I'd find a hot dog vendor on the corner and help them out with their customer life cycle and journey. So it's just been great. You get to interact with so many different people every day. It's never anything the same thing twice. And so it's been a great run.
What you just said kind of sparked something in my brain, which is a lot of times on the show I've talked about with, with various guests have talked about this too, about how like B2C, I think needs to be more of a presence in B2B. And I think customer success can learn a lot, especially digital CS can learn a lot from B2C. But your mentioning of the hot dog vendor kind of sparked that thing, which is like, why do you think that customer success is so focused on tech, and why does it not so kind of prevalent in other industries like manufacturing and stuff like that?
I'll be devil's advocate and think B2C, the company's vendors are so much closer to their customer.
So I
think there's part of it there. And in tech, dealing with so many different, unless you're hyper verticalized as a product, you're dealing with so many different use cases and trying to go to market in that way. I think, I'll get myself in trouble. But PLG has also thrown more of a problem into it. So tech, one of the big things is you have startups in tech and early mid-stage companies that are still trying to figure their way through the GTM, and they use customer success as not a feedback loop, but as a bridge and as just a second tier of support. And so all of those common problems that we've heard of and know of and lived through, it's just been more of, at times, a crutch, a kind of a hodgepodge Venn diagram of professional services meets support. Let's throw customer success in there. In terms of headcount and cost, you can do it generally at a better rate than you would a PS org, and just slightly above what you could do with a support org. And I'm talking in vast generalities, but that standing up a CS org and the flexibility to it, you can pivot it and you can evolve it, iterate it really rapidly. It doesn't have a form like a support or a PS org. So that's
Because I mean, in PS, the majority of PS lives in times and materials world. At that point, it becomes almost a red tape bureaucratic situation to throw more PS at it, at a customer.
And in CS too, it's got, this is also double edged, is you can go, COGS with it, or you go OPEX.
And so, yeah, sure.
Or you can split it. And so, finance people see a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I think you've obviously been in CS long enough to where you've experienced a lot in terms of the genesis of CS over the years. And this is the Digital CS Podcast, and we've been on this, really big wave of digital over the last, few years, really. I guess I would ask, first off, obviously, what is your elevator pitch of digital CS? How would you describe it in lay terms? And then
we live in digital age, and CS really hinges on delivering seamless and personalized experiences at scale. So, leveraging data, automation, which is continually growing in our opportunities through digital channels, which is software's tooling, the processes to guide customers proactively through their journey and onboarding, adoption, expansion, renewal, and advocacy. And so that's the why and a little bit of the how, more of the why, reducing churn, driving value realization, particularly first value and value milestones along with customer journey. Then we go back to, the last part of it, advocacy, fostering the loyalty, turning customers into raving fans and flywheel growth engines for the company. So digital CS is, it's a must have. I think kind of morphed from a scale than DCS along the way. Scaled sometimes gets run over in the street now by digital. Also important to keep in mind.
Yeah, it's so true. I think COVID had obviously a lot of side effects, no pun intended, or maybe pun intended. I think one of the things in CS, obviously, we saw massive shifts in the job market. We saw this kind of fundamental shift in CS where, all of a sudden now we're not throwing bodies at a CS org as we used to do, which is probably a good thing. And people have gotten more used to being digital and being remote and being connected that way and using chatbots and things like that. For me, one of the things that I find fascinating is the evolution of the QR code, which is like, it was this really cool thing for a while. And then it became kind of this thing where like, why are you going to use a QR code? Like, that's stupid. In fact, in one org, I was building like an employee onboarding program, and we were doing like a QR code scavenger hunt where people would go around and they would scan a QR code and they'd see a video from the CFO or see a whatever. And even then, this was maybe 10 years ago, it was like, that's kind of cool, but also kind of not. And then all of a sudden COVID hits and every restaurant has their menu on a QR code and whatever. It's just being used all over the place because it's actually a cool tool. And I think digital CS probably stands to benefit from that. I don't know where I'm going with that, but what do you make of, the state of CS today? You've been in the industry for a while. You've seen things evolve. Obviously, the digital is a huge wave at the moment. What's the state of things based on what you're seeing?
State of things. Pressure. I guess if I had to say word of the day in all directions. Let's think about the macroeconomics for a minute, because this is where all these things are, for the vast majority, are coming from. Year on year growth rates from 2020 to 2022, growth rates were in the low 30s. And then last year, almost halved. So in the high teens for public SaaS companies. So that's massive. Median net retention fallen over the same period of time by over 10 percentage points from roughly 120, which used to be, 120 is kind of like baseline, down to 110. And then companies used to get their CAC back in 12 to 18 on average months. And now we're looking at 3 years. So that's where, investors are looking and saying, well, I'm not sitting around waiting for the long term, looking at 3 to 5 years just in generalities to move their investments in there. But then if I've got to wait for CAC to come back at over 3 years, then something has got to change. So that all just comes down and trickles down. I think you see a lot of contraction in headcount, see a lot of contraction in budgets, and see a lot of M&A activity around this, not just in CS and SaaS, but across the board in other companies, giant companies that are not SaaS in tech and outside of tech. And then the most simplistic thing, we've all heard this a million times, but as you mentioned, more with less, and that's where some of the digital stuff gets more eyeballs in it. AI's gotten a ton of oxygen, just basically out of hope. there's some stuff there that's like kind of grasping at a lever to pull.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I want to get back to the, to the macroeconomic discussion here in a bit, but from an AI perspective, there's some cool stuff. There's no doubt about that. Like, there's some really cool stuff that's happening in AI, but we're not there yet. Like, there hasn't been like this coming together of like predictive, prescriptive, generative models to where like there's a end all be all of how we're going to use AI. Right now, it's a bunch of tools. And those bunch of tools are trying to figure out like where they want to live and what they want to do. And it'll be interesting to see where that comes together. and help solve some of those problems. But like, you know, back to the economics of things, you know, it's a confusing time, I think, for a lot of people, because indications are that the economy is doing relatively well at the moment, right? But SaaS seems to be like this straggler, and tech seems to be a straggler. Do you feel like that's just kind of lagging behind and waiting for this wave, or do you feel like it's a new normal?
I think it's more new normal than lag. And I say that because I look back at history that I've experienced. So 9/11, housing crisis, tech bubble. And so it changes. When you go through periods like this, there are certain experiences where it changes behavior on a level that's not going to be waved off. This is scar tissue that's going to sit with us. And so there's no one now creating a org. And this is any customer facing org is not looking at maximum efficiencies, tooling, and digital scale before they look at, well, I'm going to headcount my way through this. Not even a sales org. And so, you know, sales orgs, you can look at taking less headcount, up in quota and up in compensation, and just seeing how it rolls outside of models that we never would have looked at 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm seeing it.
Yeah. Happening across the board, which makes digitization all the more important. Doing that more with less. Are there some strong trends that you're seeing in like digital things that you've seen, that, like new platforms or people doing some really innovative, unique things that you've seen?
Before we go into the new stuff, I think some of the things that have been working, we see really growing in their efficacy. You know, call recording analysis, moving on to not just next steps, but like writing your comms for you, aggregating those and looking at, you know, what feedback can we give back to. We used to do not so long ago all of this by hand, you know, primarily. Yeah. We had some reporting in tools, but it, you know, wasn't great. And now you have these tools that can do analysis and aggregation for you at such a scale that really matters, especially if you have, you know, anywhere above 10,000-20,000 customers. You know, you need some critical mass of data to make a play. But I just think, and coming back just a little bit, some of the CS folks that are, you know, digital CS right now, outside of tools and real constructs, is there are tens of thousands of CS professionals who roll up their sleeves every day, get into one of the Gen AI tools and maximize the heck out of their time, and then take this and templatize it and share it within their orgs to, you know, make mass communication a thing. So those things I think are to be applauded. There's a lot of sweat equity that's going into how digital CS is being carried out in the infancy of how we're utilizing AI and other tools on a day-to-day. I think going further with digital CS and trans self-service, which was generally async stuff that we would, you know, look at, kind of steal from support or maybe use in conjunction with marketing, I think the self-service options have gotten really much wider in their usage. Hyper-personalization coming from a lot of sales methodologies as well, but also integration with some of the tooling that's coming out and some of the tech that's out now. Social media, kind of in the same basket, but also not, with how people are utilizing Slack. It's gotten a lot more traction. There was a lot of hesitation in how to use Slack and how not get overburdened from it and just turn on a fire hose.
Yeah.
But there's been good methodology around that. So, and then sales engagement tools, which have been beneficial to really staying ahead of customers. Just staying in touch with customers.
Funny you say that, because it's like the common gripe is that in CS, you know, we have so few CS specific built tools, so we got to leverage all these sales tools and hack around them to make them work on the post sale. But you mentioned a lot of really great things. And I do find a lot more orgs installing AI chatbots, which is super cool when you can train your chatbot on your your community and your knowledge base and that wealth of knowledge that's there. I think that gets into obviously support ticket deflection and things like that. There are a couple of people I've been talking to where the best practice seems to be launch that thing internally first. Let your internal teams use it first, poke holes in it, make sure it's serving up the right information, but then also use it as a tool to help you do your job more effectively. Because I think so much of digital isn't, and you've touched on this, so much of digital isn't like just customer facing. It's building those efficiencies internally and, you know, those call transcripts and writing recap emails. And it's like all those things that we're doing on a daily basis, on a repeated basis, where we can see a lot of efficiency. So that's cool. And yeah, Slack is an interesting one. I had Ralphie English on the podcast half a year ago. I don't know. So whenever that was. And she is in an interesting scenario where like she doesn't have a platform, you know? So she can't do in-app messaging. It's an API. And so, yeah, her primary method of communication with customers is Slack, for better or for worse. I think you can get into overwhelm real quick with Slack too, though.
Well, it happens internally.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You know, I've lost track of how many channels I'm in, and I've lost track of how many notifications I've ignored. Notification overload. I always like to ask if you've seen any like digital emotions in your everyday life that you've been kind of like impressed by, or you've kind of experienced and you've been like, oh, I know what that is.
Yeah, I think for the audience listening, I'll come back to sales engagement tools. So using something like SalesLoft or Marketo. And I say that because it's got a wide reach and you're using IP that already exists and hopefully, you know, content that can also be utilized as well from marketing and sales. And so I think that's for a lot of folks that are probably, you know, in your audience, those are good places to start and get a big bang for your buck, provided you have solid journey mapping and provided you have content, which is, you know, right message, right time, right person. We're not trying to get into the, you know, wave my hand in the air so you can see me, but really look at, you know, what milestones and what points in the value can I drive at particular moments in the life cycle. So though that one, I would just say with a wide swath of coverage can do, and if you're looking at budgeting, it's already in house, so it might just be a slight addition and it's already been approved into security. And so you have a lot of upside there.
I love the scrappiness that digital CS folks have. It's just like, what data do we have? What tools do we have? One top tip that I've heard a couple times now is make best friends with your IT people because they know every SaaS application that exists within the org and who has it. Because chances are, if you're looking at Calendly, somebody already has Calendly, or if you're looking at whatever, somebody's got it.
Or something in the family, right?
Yeah. I mean, we had a practical example of that recently where we were literally looking at purchasing Calendly. I think it was Calendly. And, you know, we're a Microsoft shop. So it was like, well, does M365 have something? And yes, it does. It's called Booking and it works just fine. Yeah, integrates with all your stuff that you already have. Whether you love or hate the Microsoft ecosystem, they've got it. So.
Well, there's a reason why it's an ecosystem. There's a reason why they'll acquire a tool and throw it in for free. Yeah.
That's right. Absolutely. Make it sticky. And it's those things are hard to rip out, right? I mean, if you, I've actually been through a Google to Microsoft transition and it's atrocious and it's probably atrocious on purpose.
Yeah. Rip replace is supposed to be painful.
Uh-huh. It's supposed to be painful. Yeah, absolutely. I always love to learn from not only my mistakes, but I love learning from other people's mistakes and things that I see around, you know, around me. But are there any like massive blunders that you've seen kind of people do digitally where you're like, oh God, you know, shouldn't have done that or didn't quite land the way you wanted it to?
You know, the one that I made, I was first getting into looking at content and CS and how we were going to own it. And, you know, I had great journey mapping and process maps. And I was like, all right, now we're going to do, I had built this CS ops teams and added some headcount to these teams that were really kind of outside the fold, like an internal trainer just for, you know, CS sitting in ops, data analyst, which isn't new, but it was then, and project management and stuff like that, sitting in ops, CS ops, not rev ops. And so my next step was to do content. And so wrote the JD, worked out the RACI and all this. And I called it customer success marketing. And the minute I did that, my COO said, yeah, that's going to go over to marketing.
Oh, so, good. Yeah.
Completely lost that one.
You're welcome.
Well, exactly. I mean, I did it with a smile on my face and very quickly because I knew, you know, where I had gone. And I was like, well, that's just, you know, I'm going to have to learn from that one. That was a big one, which doesn't sound huge, but when you're flying down the highway at, you know, 140 miles an hour, that would have been key to getting to where we're going, and then having lost complete control of it. Handing it over, I did happily, but
that was and you know, you've probably been hyping it with the team and all this stuff, like they're all like in it.
Hyping it with myself. God. I'm pretty good at not, you know, trumpeting something until it's ready to go. But anyways, I think some other things that I wish I would have learned more quickly, you know, how important cross-functional allegiances and alliances are, building initiatives that are going to, you know, cross-pollinate and work for everyone.
Sharing
clips of calls cross-functionally carries so much value for how you're trying to advocate for customers or trying to provide feedback across the org. Those are two things that come to mind.
Tell me more about that. How did that look? What did that look like tactically? How would you go about doing that? Because that involves going back to the recording and clipping out a segment and then distributing. Like, that's time, right?
Yeah. Well, I'll break it down quickly. Establishing a cadence with your, let's go with product. All right. So you got product, sales, marketing, and support. You've got regular cadences with, you're aggregating, you're saying, here's the ARR that, or the MRR that we have at risk with these top key issues and giving you a top five. And we're doing this bi-weekly or we're doing this monthly and we're all tracking on it. And you know, there's ownership and you have executive sponsor that's sitting over this and making sure hawkishly that everyone's doing what they're supposed to be doing and owning. And then coming back from that and saying, you know, I'm going to put this in, you just throw it in the spreadsheet. But you've got to get your team into, whether it's even anecdotal or it's sentiment, if you don't have an object in your CRM or your CSP where you're coding this stuff, it's like, okay, here's the issue, and I have ears to it. If you have some call recording software that you can do keyword stuff, that's helpful. Mm-hmm. But it's really about your team, your CS team, identifying and being with you, like I said, even not there, but sharing this with the team and saying, here's the top five things that we're reporting back to support. Here's the top five things that we're reporting to marketing and flagging those and then getting the snippet and saying, here it is. And you're sharing that as high as you can to get visibility into it. So that's the tactical
one. That's cool. It's a mindset shift, right? Because as a CSM going into a call, you're prepping for the call, you have things you want to hit or whatever. But then as the call is happening, you kind of almost have to have this thing in your back of your brain that says, you know, we need to grab that out of there. Because if you're not thinking about it, then going back to it makes it definitely harder.
Well, and for the CSM, the amount of empowerment that you give to them and that they can express the share to the customer, I'm going to take exactly what you just said, and I'm going to share that because we have these biweekly or monthly updates with with support or product, and they're going to get this, and that 15 seconds of what you just said, they're going to hear directly. And so the customer will say, I can't hold myself, my company accountable for what might come out of it, but I know that you'll be there.
That's so cool. I love that because you're right. That cross-collaborative work is something that is kind of inherent in the nature of CS in general. But then if you're building these digital strategies on top of that stuff, you got to make sure it aligns with, like, okay, when is marketing communicating certain things and what inputs do they need from the customer? And when is product doing X, Y, Z and all of that kind of stuff. So cross-collaboration is huge, in my opinion. I've been actually writing about it in the newsletter. So If you're not subscribed to the newsletter, go subscribe to the newsletter. And speaking of newsletters, I want to, as we kind of start to wrap up our convo, I'd love to understand what you're paying attention to. What's your content diet? What are your books, podcasts? What are you ingesting?
I'll start at, I guess, the highest level or stuff I listen to broadly. There's Scott Galloway. There's a podcast called Prof. G. Sastra podcast. So broad to SAS to CS. CS, most people have heard of Lincoln Murphy. So Lincoln Murphy and his colleague, Johan Nilsson, do Impact Weekly, which is really solid. It's great at every level of CS, the things that they cover. Dave Kellogg's Kell Blog, a lot of people know that. Yeah, so those are some things that I find an immense amount of value out of.
That's a good collection, for sure. Yeah, that Kell Blog is spot on.
I had the fortune of working at Business Objects while he was our CMO. That's where a big point in time, at that period of time, we went from being a tool to a platform. And that was before SaaS hit. That was a revolution.
Yeah, for sure. That's cool. Do you want to give any shout outs to anybody who's like doing great things in digital or is particularly forward thinking in CS?
You know, just recently listened to your podcast with our friend Reed Ezips, and she was talking about some digital stuff and the use of digital personas, if I remember correctly. And there is a tool by a company called Cast.app, led by CEO Dickie Singh, and that opportunity there for not just CS, but I think there's other opportunities. And the way the tool has grown and their offerings have grown, those folks are doing some really great work. There's hyper-personalization, there's massive efficiencies, there's aggregation, there's some predictive in there. And so as a total package, it's something that is really eye-opening.
Yeah, I'm a huge Cast fan. In fact, Dickie was on the episode. I'm trying to see what he was, episode 40. So not too long ago, but he's like a breath of fresh air in CS. And I think part of the reason is he comes to it from an outsider's perspective, you know, a lifelong engineer, and he's just trying to solve some problems and saw this problem that we've been talking about, like building economy into serving a customer the right way. And he's doing a cool job and a bunch of AI stuff in the background there. So that's super cool. Where can people find you? What have you been up to? Anything you want to plug? Like, it's your time.
I'll just say, anybody wants to connect, LinkedIn is the place, and stuff that I think about gets dropped in.
Yeah, cool. I love following you on LinkedIn, and love that you're here, and thanks for sharing your knowledge and dealing with our connection issues that we've somehow battled through.
Well, thank you, Alex. And again, for what you do for the community, thank you. Much appreciated.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate it. Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Digital CX Podcast. If you like what we're doing, consider leaving us a review on your podcast platform of choice. If you're watching on YouTube, leave a comment down below. It really helps us to grow and provide value to a broader audience. You can view the Digital Customer Success Definition Word Map and get more information about the show and some of the other things that we're doing at digitalcustomersuccess.com. This episode was edited by Lifetime Value Media, a media production company founded by our good mutual friend Dylan Young. Lifetime Value aims to serve the content, video, audio production needs of the CS and post-sale community. They're offering services at a steep discount for a limited time, so navigate to lifetimevaluemedia.com, go have a chat with Dylan, and make sure you mention the Digital CX Podcast sent you. I'm Alex Turkovich. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.